Wowzer.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Stephen the Devil French Decoded Part 3. We are live. He's going to be joining us any moment, but many of you are familiar with Stephen's story. Go back years on this channel. He was one of our very first ever podcast guests. The level of detail he gets into is absolutely phenomenal. And in this series, of which we're on part three, last week we got some exclusive prison stories, and we were just absolutely blown away by the level of detail and what Stephen told us last week. Ron, good job, man, getting Stephen to go these places.
You know, he's a very passionate speaker, to say the least, and the way that he was talking about prison, I think we all kind of expected it to be hard-hitting gore stories, if I'm being honest with you, right? But it wasn't. It was a visually horrifying time in his life. And it was an eye-opener for me, because you could see just how much of a dark period it was for him. And I think as well, there's other aspects. There's the criminality side. There's a level to which that you sort of annoyed authority. There's racism. There's so much in the pot that, you know, I don't think about, because it doesn't relate to me in that sort of sense, if that makes sense. And yeah, and listen, just want to say, Stephen will be back. I don't know what has happened, but if you just want to have a chitty chat, I'll jump on trying to find out what's happened there, Sean.
Yeah, and your mic's making a little bit of a noise as well, Ron, at the end of each sentence. It's going zzz, zzz, zzz. All right, so while Ron addresses all those issues, I will talk to the viewers. So, coming up on Friday, not tomorrow, a week on Friday in London, it's the first day of the Michael Francis tour, and about 50 of my podcast guests are going to be present on that night. The next day is the Kingston London one, and I would say about 20 to 30 of my podcast guests are going to be present on that night as well. So if you have booked a ticket for that and you are coming along, please come and say hi. And it's a unique chance, really, to meet not just Michael Francis, but so many of the people that we have been honored to interview over the years. It's going to be the first time they'll all be under one roof in one place at the same time. Then there's a bit of a break in the tour. We're going over to Cardiff. Then after Cardiff, we're heading up north. We've got Francis in Birmingham, Manchester. Then he's going over to Belfast and Dublin. And in Glasgow, which has been the top seller in the whole country, the Glasgow Francis, the Glasgow one is almost sold out as well, almost 400 people. And many of our podcast guests out of Glasgow, and we've had a hell of a lot of them. We've got Jerry going out on Sunday at 7 p.m., a five-hour podcast with Jerry, who ended up coming down and filming with us a couple of weeks ago. He's going to be there. Many of the other Scottish podcast guests are going to be there. And that is going to be the last one, is the one with in Glasgow. We are going to be in Glasgow on April the 2nd as well. There's actually a dinner between Paul Ferris and Michael Francis, and people can come along and buy tickets to the dinner. I think they start at £600. So all these tickets, if anyone's interested in them, are on Eventbrite. But yeah, Kaza, shout out to Kaz in the chat. Honestly, some of the best stories I've ever heard in my life come out of Glasgow. Yeah. In particular, the Gorbals.
It's an interesting spot, I have to say.
Jerry, who's coming on Sunday night, five-hour podcast. His storytelling ability is off the scale. It's absolutely one of the best podcasts that we've ever done. He came down on the train. We had a meal with him afterwards. What a fantastic guy, everything he's been through. And when you are watching the podcast with Jerry on Sunday, if you're tuning in for that one, he was charged with murder, but that was because some guys came to attack or kill a person. He was in that building. That person wasn't there. And he took action that was self-defense until he left the property chasing after them. If he'd have done what he did within the property that they smashed the door in to come and get this guy, but got him instead, were trying to get him instead. They said they were going to snuff him out and throw him off the balcony. He thought, right, I ain't just waiting around for this to happen. I'm going to take it to them. And he took it to them, and they realized they'd bitten off more than they can chew, and they started to flee. But he went after them. And I think he was called, there was a headline, he was called the Umbrella Killer or something like that. But in my opinion, it was self-defense. He didn't mean to happen what happened. And it's really tragic and sad that someone did die. But yeah, come and hear Jerry's story on Sunday. And it's not just violence either. There's a point in the podcast where he has this cellmate who's absolutely bonkers. And the things this cellmate does, playing imaginary instruments and kind of looking at Jerry in like a salacious way and just making all these far-fetched stories up, off the scale. I have never laughed so hard in years. And all the camera crew, James was here, the cameraman, Joe, the sound engineer, we were just laughing our asses off. And this story about this bonkers cellmate, it did go on for about 20 minutes, I think, at least. And we've got it. I've asked James, the cameraman, to isolate that clip and get it on the dashboard.
And, sounds good.
I'm gonna get a thumbnail on it as soon as possible and
get that. Sounds good. It makes you wonder what would be worse, like a really quiet, creepy, intense cellmate, or a completely bonkers playing musical instruments and living in a fantasy world roommate. It would be an interesting debate, I think, on that one. Ah, here we go. See, the technology has not defeated him.
I had to just download the app. It said unknown browser, and we've used it twice.
We're good. Don't worry.
No. I reckon we're being nobbled. I reckon we're being nobbled by dark forces.
Yes. Yeah. Nobbled by
dark forces. I'm serious.
It sounds like a death metal album. Listen, I'm not gonna lie.
Listen, your links that you sent out never got there. So, or if you're telling the truth, right. So, strange things happen around me, bro. Strange things happen around me online. What I'm trying to say, or what I'm trying to bring, has always got suppressed. I've been branded a liar. I've been branded all kind of things just to keep my message from landing. But we're live.
Well, whatever you've done, you're about three times the quality in the camera now as you were before.
I downloaded some app and went in and put the thing in. I'm a bit tech savvy. I got it sorted out anyway. But it went, as we started off, it clicked up unknown browser, and I couldn't go on it through Google. I was going on it through I forget the streaming app. But I was we've done two. Third one, and it says unknown browser. I find that strange personally.
They have tried to shut down some of our live streams before, Stephen. We've had all kinds of hassle. Hackers and dark forces and MI5 and all kinds of shit over the years.
Listen. The difficulty and the thing is, I bring details. When I'm telling a story, I bring verifiable details, especially when I'm talking about public authorities, institutions with authority and power, and I name the individuals, and they don't like it. I've been told, I remember I was on license, and I was arguing with Widow probation. Yeah, Claire Paddy. See, the name's just come to me. Claire Paddy was the senior probation officer. Yeah, right. And you're allowed to make a contribution. Yeah, you're right, to what you call your MAPA meeting, multi-purpose agency protection. MAPA, it's what's supposed to protect the public from violent criminals, and it's the police, the CPS, the children's services, and you all come together and have a meeting about you, and you can be MAPA 1, MAPA 2, MAPA 3. I was MAPA 1. Yeah, right? Now, when you're on license, yeah, you're right, if you get a warning, you're recalled. Yeah, now, there was some argy-bargy with regards to me, yeah, and people trying to take pot shots at me. So I told them that I didn't want to go to, I didn't want to fix time, and I didn't want to go to a fixed probation officer, right? Because if I've got a routine, I do have enemies that have tried to shoot me, yeah? And I know two guys that have been shot in probation, yeah, in the South End, actually shot coming out of probation. And I didn't want that to happen to me. Anyway, they forced me to go, yeah, right? I was arguing with them, yeah, right? And she gave me a written warning. Yeah, she gave me a written warning. One more warning, and I would have been recalled to jail. But because I know how to combat these people and go to their regulatory bodies, which was a body in Manchester called, it was their ombudsman. Yeah, yeah, right. And I contacted their ombudsman. Yeah, yeah, right. And he seen what had happened, because just to give the clarification for the story, I was trying to get to see my daughter, my new daughter and my granddaughter, and probation was blocking me. They were blocking me. When they find out, when you're the guy like me and you're fighting them, and they find out there's something that you want, yeah, yeah, right. They try to take it away from you, right? It's like if you fill an application in and you say, I never ever want to go to Risley Jail. They'll send you to Risley Jail, yeah, right. They'll do anything to disrumple you or to discombobulate you.
Yeah.
So I wrote to them in January 2017, and I told them that I was going to record all my interviews. Yeah, yeah. Right when I went into probation, tape record all my interviews, because I didn't trust them. Yeah, yeah. Right. I've had probation officers not tell the truth about me before. They told me that I couldn't record them, and it wasn't allowed. I said, it actually is allowed, as long as I don't play for a third party and I only use it for rebuttal purposes. You can't stop me from doing it. So I went ahead and recorded it. But they forgot that I sent them that email. I sent them that email sometime in January. You always have to keep your paperwork straight with these people.
Did you find that your vast knowledge of the legal system frustrated and angered, you know, who, you know, these people that you came up against in the legal system?
Really and truly, I wasn't really interested in how it made them feel.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Right. Now, I wasn't, let me take my time. I wasn't looking for special dispensation.
No.
I wasn't looking for special treatments. When I'm speaking, Rocco, I'm not speaking to you. I'm speaking to the audience.
Yeah, you're
right. Yeah, I'm speaking to the audience. I wasn't looking for special dispensation. I wasn't looking for any special measures. What I was looking for is to be treated fairly. Yeah, to be treated like any ordinary guy on license from prison. Yeah, right. And not have the malfeasance that follows me everywhere I go. So. They kept giving me female probation officers, yeah, right? So I was telling this female probation officer that she needed to get hold of Liverpool Social Services in order to speed up the process so I could be allowed to meet my new daughter and my new granddaughter that were born while I was in prison, yeah? They put license conditions on me that I couldn't meet them when I came out. Not that I'm any danger to children. It's just that my lifestyle is a danger to children. I'm estranged from my eldest daughter. I love my eldest daughter with a passion. Yeah, I won't even call her name. I don't put any pictures of my grandchildren or my children in any of my social medias because the skid marks and no marks that can't deal with me attack my family. Yeah, right? She, Abby, had her life threatened. Yeah, she had her life threatened by a guy called Roy Hickman. Yeah, Roy Hickman was running Preston's jail. Yeah, yeah, right. And he was the one that geared 12 scouts was up against me when I was on, I think it was B Wing or C Wing. Anyway, back to the story about probation. So I'm asking my probation officer, to phone Liverpool Social Services, yeah, because I've already been cleared to meet my daughter. Yeah, right. And if I'm okay to meet my daughter, I'm okay to meet my granddaughter. And my daughter was going to graduate from university the 17th of July, 2017. It was a culmination of a life plan that I had for my daughter that I started while she was in her mum's belly. She was privately educated, went to all the best schools. Yeah, yeah. And I wanted to see her walk across that stage and get her degree, and they didn't want to let me. Yeah. So I said to her, you need to pull your finger out and make a phone call. Yeah, yeah. She said, okay, Stephen, I'll do it. Then I received a warning from Claire Paddy. And Claire Paddy says to me, you made your probation officer feel, she was a female, can't remember her name. You made her feel uncomfortable. Yeah. So she ended the meeting, and I'm giving you your first warning, one more warning, and you recalled. I said, is that right? Yeah. I contacted the ombudsman. Yeah, you're right. I played them a recording. Yeah, right. She didn't end the meeting. I told her to make the phone call. She said, okay, Stephen, I'll make the phone call. And she left. Yeah, there was no uncomfortableness in it. They were just trying to play on that noncy factor, yeah, that had just come off a rape charge, yeah, right, and that I make women feel uncomfortable. This is why I recorded them, to safeguard myself. Yeah, when the ombudsman, heard the tape, the formal warning was rescinded, and Claire Parry, who said she would never apologize to me for anything, had to write to me and apologize to me, yeah? And that was one of the reasons why I was leaving Liverpool, yeah, right? Because I was still under their jaw restriction, yeah? I was still under the MAPA committee, yeah? And malfeasance, which is the abuse of power, right? In Liverpool, is the regular way they do business. Because when I came to London, I went to Camden and Islington probation services, and they gave me another young white lady. Yeah, her name was Julia White, and she was the best probation officer I ever had. Yeah, she broke down the deadlock within 4 weeks of me being there, which allowed me to see my children, and I got to go to the Lowry Centre and watch my daughter pass out. Yeah, and receive her 2-1 in mechanical engineering, and that was the culmination of a life plan. So, and it was at the time, and this is just for young men. It was at the time when probation was turning from private and public, and they don't have a clue what they're doing. They haven't got a Scooby-Doo. Yeah, right. And it's not about rehabilitation for our young men. It's not, and when I say our young men, I'm not talking about black young men. I'm talking about young men across the board, young men that reoffend. They're not interested in rehabilitation. This is why they're building super prisons in Wales, prisons that hold 3,000 prisoners, yeah, right? Because it's going exactly the way of America, cheap labor. Slave labor in the prisons, yeah, right? So here's an interesting stuff for you. Here's an interesting stuff for you. In the 30 years since Tony Blair changed all the laws with regards to who could sit on the jury and who couldn't sit on the jury, yeah, and allowed police officers to sit on the jury and probation workers to sit on the jury. Crime is halved, but the prison population is doubled. That's called an anomaly. Yeah, that's called a strange fact. Something is strange is going on. And what they're doing is they're feeding the prison system. The difficulties that they had with me when I was in prison, yeah, is as well as being a quadruple karate champion, as well as being a restaurateur, as well as being a security boss, as well as being a taxman, right? I'm a trained social scientist, Redbrick University, Liverpool Redbrick University, and I understand the social topography of organizations and the stuff that's going on. For example, and this, I'll lead this into my first prison story. With regards to education, Manchester City College has the contract. And the contract is approximately worth £10 million per year. Yeah. Now, when I was in HMP Liverpool, on the morning time, 40 prisoners would be sent over to education and signed through the jail books and through everything. But then 30 would be sent back. And I watched this happen. Actually, when I was doing my fighting preacher videos in 2017, I actually called out the governor of HMP Liverpool. His name was Franny. And I said, what are you doing with the money, Franny baby, for the other 30 prisoners? For example, the contract for bread in prison. Yeah, right. In prison, they must get maybe 3,000 or 4,000 loaves a week. And the Masonics, they're all Masons, old school type brigade, and they're all kicking the contracts to each other and kicking a penny back off a loaf, or 10 pence off a loaf, Now, this is just through observation, I never actually did no research, But the rehabilitation industry is a $1 billion industry. And the lawyers, the judges, the solicitors, the probation officers, the prison officers, the police, they've all got their nose in the trough. Because as far back as 2007, I wrote to DCI Lynch, talking about restorative justice and new strategies to combat the growing new phenomenon at that time of gun and knife crime. I'm talking nearly 20 years ago, 2007. And that's when I became aware that they're not really interested. They like it that way. And they like to keep it that way, because what you have to remember, is 1% of the population own all the wealth. That 1% use 4% who make up the politicians, to control 90% of the people that are unaware of what's going on, too busy making the payments on the mortgages or the rent. And 5% of us are aware of what they're doing. So they have to shut us down and close us down. They don't want people knowing things like this. So they interfere with what we're doing. They make, right as we're going online, an app that I've been using for 2 episodes for 4 hours, all of a sudden cuts off. It's only that I'm a little bit tech savvy and I can do what I'm doing that I'm back online. Yeah, and I don't believe that these things are coincidental. It's like I've thought for a long time, my figures about me are suppressed. Yeah, right. I feel I do a lot more figures than that get put out. And then I was asking Rocco last week, yeah? Oh, sidebar. Apparently, according to Daniel Hull, me calling you Rocco is disrespectful.
Yeah, I didn't understand that one. I didn't understand that one.
Yeah, yeah, right. No. This is the skid marks and no marks, the way they come at me. Yeah, they can't come at me. They can't call me a snitch anymore. They can't call me a grass anymore. They've got to find some way to come at me. So now they're saying that Sean, you was missing last week because it was so boring, you had to do one. they don't know that you was busy. Yeah, yeah. And so I'm calling them out. I'm calling these people out. I'm calling Daniel Hull out. Yeah, and saying his name's Rocco.
Yeah.
So you're talking out your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to what we're talking about. So the trouble that the authorities had with me is I watched everything that they did. Yeah, right. And I wasn't frightened of them. I'm not fearful of them yet. Yeah. I've only ever been rendered unconscious twice. I've never been rendered unconscious in a fight, and I've never been rendered unconscious of an enemy. Yeah, I've only been ever rendered unconscious of 4 police officers and 4 prison officers. Yeah, yeah. And I write poetry about what they do to me, and I write poetry to defuse the aggression that's inside me, because I, as a man, I'm on a journey to be a better person, yeah, right? Look at the title of what this podcast is called. It's called The Devil Decoded. And I'm decoding the man that I was made through circumstances of birth and poor choices on my behalf. Yeah, yeah. I own the mistakes that I made. I own the decisions that I took. Yeah, right. But there was also outside variables forcing us in a certain path. Yeah, right. Which led me into a life of crime. And like I've told you, yeah. It started with me before then. Yeah, right. So with regards to prison and probation services, yeah. They're not interested in rehabilitating offenders. It's about containment, and it's about free, cheap labor. And where I base that opinion on, you're right, is the super prisons that they're building around the country, prisons to hold 3,000 prisoners in a prison. Yeah, right? Now, do you think that those in positions of authority and power would be spending all the money on those prisons if they didn't think they were going to fill them? And who are they going to fill them with? Yeah. It's like I seen the chief constable of the Met, yeah, talking about violence against women and girls. It's called VOG, Violence Against Women and Girls. What people don't understand is third wave feminists, yeah, have taken over the universities up and down the country. Liberal lefties, yeah, right? And they're pushing this agenda, yeah, that masculinity and men are all toxic. Yeah, when in actuality, yeah, a man is more likely to be attacked when he goes out. Now, when a man goes out, they say, yeah, but he's going to be attacked by another man. That's victim blaming. That's victim shaming. You can't do that. If a man attacks another man, yeah, right, that man's a victim. You understand? Yeah. And these are the subtle differences I, as a social scientist, can identify and see. It's not that I'm a misogynist, yeah, or that I hate women, because I'm not a misogynist. I don't hate women. I'm not a racist, yeah, but I can point out the disparity and the unfairness, yeah, right? If you remove the patriarchy and if you remove the protection of men from women, there'd be disasters. I myself went to prison, yeah, right? Because the guy that I pistol whipped wouldn't fight me in a ring, put your guard up, let's go, and bang lumps off each other, but threatened my sister, who was alive, hairdressers, and threatened my daughter. This is a separate time from Roy Hickman threatening her, threatened to you know, do stuff to my, and that's why I pistol whipped him. I protected my family, and I went to jail. I was the anti-gun campaigner who pistol whipped a man and became guilty of a hypocritical act. I own my hypocrisy. I was a hypocrite. I was an anti-gun campaigner who, after three attempts on his life, having his house firebombed, being shot at two times, cracked wide open, yeah, and returned to violence. And I went to prison happy, and I did my 2 years. I took my punishment like a man, yeah. And I wrote a letter of apology to everybody in Merseyside for what I did. But what happened, is I was taken to the brink. I was taken to the brink. Yeah, I'd been campaigning against knives and guns from 2005 to 2013 for 8 years. Yeah, I had Evander Holyfield involved. I had John Conte involved. I had Shane Eyre involved. I had Alfie Lewis involved. I had Tony Bellew involved. Yeah, I had all the main fighters. With my Increase the Peace program and lending me their support. And I was doing it on my own dollar, all out of my own pocket, because I'm not a poor black boy with my hat off. Help me, please help me. I believe in self-help is the only help, and I was doing it for myself. I was doing it for myself, and I was genuine, and I was genuine about it, you're right? But I fell by the wayside with the pressure. I was taken to the brink, and I fell off. Now, I've come back again. And this is why I argue with these people online. But let me make it clear. Let me make it clear to those who watch me and pull out their own hair and scratch their own skin with envy and jealousy about me and come online and saying I'm being disrespectful for calling a man by his name just because they want to say something negative to me. And I've removed the label of snitch and informer. Yeah, I've removed the label of incestuous pedophile. I've removed the labels of sex offenders. Yeah, so they've got to find something new, because they can't come online and call me a dirty black bastard or a dirty stinking nigger, because that's not allowed. Yeah, right? So here's the situation. I won't be taken to the brink again. I was taken to the brink in 2017 by a guy called Sam Walker. Yeah, Sam, the Lion Bacon Walker. Yeah. And he traveled from London, from Liverpool to London, live streaming to his Facebook. Yeah, yeah, that he was coming down here to have a fight with me. Yeah. When I knew, I had a friend called Steve Cronin. He did the same thing to Steve Cronin. When Steve Cronin turned up to fight him, the helicopter was up and Steve Cronin got nicked. Yeah, right. There was no way I was going to fight this guy in the street. Yeah, yeah. This is the same guy that in 2013 wrote a letter to the Echo saying that he beat me up in HMP Liverpool just to get his name in the paper. Yeah. It was raging. There was an online complaint about me, and it was raging, and I was taken to the brink again, and I was almost coming up. And I have a friend, a doorman friend, called Ian Hollywood. Yeah. I first met Ian Hollywood in the late 90s. He was working on the door. And I went to go in. What was the club called? It was a club at the bottom of Bowl Street. Life Bar. I went to go into Life Bar. And he stopped me. He stopped me from going into Life Bar. And he was a short, stocky guy. And he had a radio in his hand. Yeah, right. I'm with a couple of my friends and that, yeah, right? And I'm at the height of my prowess, yeah, right? But we're having trouble. My crew was Franny Bennett, Ian Rock, yeah, and those guys, all the guys off shooters. Yeah, I wasn't on shooters because they wouldn't pay me. Yeah, right? I wasn't going to do it for nothing. All the guys off shooters was on the firm that I was with. They used to call them the Head and the Death Squad. Right, and there was some trouble between the Lynchers, which was a 051 crew, and
hang on a second. There we go. I think your mic's you're fine now. You're fine now. Carry on. You're all good. Oh, wait now. Just say something.
So, run by room. Who called the Lynchers? The Lynchers. Yeah, and he wouldn't let me in. Yeah, threw his radio down and was ready to fight with me. I phoned Tony Bellew Senior, the father of Tony Bellew, the boxer. Yeah, who was my friend. We knew each other. We knew each other through Tony's mum, Gail. Yeah, when we were all small children, we knew Gail. Yeah, and Tony is a very fair guy, yeah, and an incredible street fighter. Yeah, and he told Ian Hollywood to let me in. Later on, it transpires, right, that they get so fed up with me that a contract's placed on my life, and the police come to see me. And here goes my memory again. DC Spate. Eight. And I remember it's eight with an S. Yeah. And they come to see me. They come to see me at home and they say to me, we've got police intelligence that there's a contract on your life. Yeah. Now, if you read Joey Owens' book, Door Wars to Race Wars. Yeah, it's covered in, this story is covered in that book. And Joey Owens, yeah, if you want me to come on your podcast, Joey Owens, I'll come on your podcast and I'll sit right next to you and talk to you like I'm talking here and now, yeah, about this. Yeah, Joey Owens says, I screamed and cried my way out of getting killed. Yeah, I cried like a baby. Yeah, out of my way getting killed. So anybody that's had a contract put on them and they scream and cry not to be killed, they still get killed. Yeah, or the contract goes forward. What happened? And in the book, he says they sent over to Ireland for Irish killers, and he was speaking Gaelic, and he was doing this, and he was doing that. And they came over. They came over to get me. And they did come over. But too many people knew. The word got out, and I don't know why it collapsed until Ian Hollywood wrote to me in prison. Yeah, Ian Hollywood went over to see the Irish people, and apparently, he organized them coming over. But when he came back, he changed his mind and he didn't do it. It still went ahead, but it never went ahead with Ian Hollywood. Ian Hollywood wrote to me in prison and asked, and we wrote, started writing to each other. He asked me if I remembered him from the life ball. I remembered him from the life ball because not many men have stood in front of me and said, let's have it. He was one that said, let's have it. Yeah. And he asked me for my forgiveness. He is now the resident chaplain at Alder A Hospital. Yeah. And gives small children that are going to pass over the last rites before they go to meet Jesus, if you believe in the afterlife. And he settles the families. He's a wonderful, wonderful soul. In 2017, he traveled from Liverpool to London, yeah, because he could see online that I was getting aerated and wound up, yeah. And he said to me, he calmed me down. He calmed me down and said, don't let this fool break your peace and do what you're doing. That was the second time that I was taken to the precipice. Yeah, I didn't fall off. But the allegations of being an incestuous paedophile and raping my own 18-month daughter, that he, the mother, and the woman that accused me of rape, manufactured with 10 online fake profiles, affected me deeply. That's why I disappeared for 3 years. Yeah, off social media. Yeah. Because that stuff got attraction. Yeah. I got a Christian brother called Jared McCormack. Yeah. Yeah. Mac means son of, and McCormack means warrior, chariot driver. Yeah, you're right. He's a soldier and he's my friend. And he was encouraging me to come back onto social media. And I came back onto social media, yeah, right? And then I was getting told that Stephen French can't come to Liverpool. If Stephen French comes to Liverpool, yeah, watch what happens to him. Messages all over the place. So on the 18th of December, 2023, I went to watch Liverpool play Man United. Yeah, and I went to meet 3-piece chicken and chips so everybody knew that it was me. And I went on my own. Yeah, right. Because I'll go anywhere I want to go in Liverpool, including Anfield. Yeah. And the only thing that happened was everybody has to take selfies with me. In the morning time, though, I went to meet Jeddah's church. His church is called Bethel Church, House of God, next to the Mons in Bootle. Pastor Graham Jones says, I've got somebody that I want you to meet. And a white guy walks over to me. Before he opens his mouth or says anything to me, yeah, I look at him. And I never met the guy, this guy that was sent over to kill me. Never met him. And I said to him, you're the guy that was paid to kill me. He was paid 30K to kill me. Connected to the real IRA. You've got the IRA, yeah, who are politically motivated, and then you've got the real IRA that will take money to kill people. This guy was connected to the real IRA. Yeah, I'm not going to call his name because these things are still alive. Yeah, just suffice to say that his family to Michael Collins, from the 1918 Bloody Sunday uprising, was killed by his own people. That Michael Collins, it's his family, I found out in this church. When I looked at him, I said, you're the guy that got paid 30 grand to kill me. He said, no, it was 80. Yeah. And he told me what weapons he had. The Russian Kalashnikov, I have difficulty saying that word. 2 self-loading rifles. Yeah, you're right. And they'd come to kill me. And he called it off. And in the house of God, we hugged each other and forgave each other. Yeah. And I've got photographs of that. Yeah. And when Rocco and I do our podcast, yeah, we'll bring him on. We'll black his face off him so you can't hear who he is. And we'll bring him on. Yeah. And we'll have that story, the receipts for that story confirmed. Yeah. Because Joey Owens, who I like Joey Owens because he'll tell you he doesn't like black people. He'll tell you he's a racist. Out and out tell you he's racist. That's the type of guy I prefer. Yeah. You know where you stand with him. Yeah. Yeah. What he's wrote about me in his book is a load of tosh. Yeah. And you can contact me through Sean Atwood. Yeah. And invite me on your podcast. And I'll come and tell you to your face. Yeah. Right. Because I've never feared those people. And I never will. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And I fought with those type of guys my whole life. Yeah. So me being here now and doing this work, yeah, you're right. I'm fighting hate with love. I'm fighting lies with truth. I'm fighting darkness with light. Yeah. And I'm not ramming home a Christian message because I'm not a traditional Christian. Yeah, I don't really believe in religion. I have more of a spiritual connection to a higher power. Yeah, right? And I believe I have a destiny. And I believe that my destiny is beginning to unfold. Yeah, I had to lose everything. I had to be stripped of everything, broken down, cast into jail. Yeah, ridiculed. Hunted and destroyed, basically have my reputation destroyed, yeah, right, before I was ready. And look at me now, 64 years of age. The only thing I do to myself is I use Just for Men on my beard. They try to make pressure over that. I dye my beard. So fucking what? Yeah.
That's a banger. You know, that's getting clipped and made into a short, right? That's a banger. That was an epic story again.
I think it's time to promote Mr. Michael Francine, who I can't wait to meet. Roll a clip, Rocco.
I will.
And what else happens in that?
Burn a saint and altar card in your hands, and you actually take an oath.
And what is that oath?
The oath is if you violate what you know about this life, betray your brothers, you'll die and burn in hell. It's like saint is burning in your hands. And do you accept that oath? And I said, yes, I did.
Did you meet him?
Many times, yeah.
What was he like?
Great. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Constantly be thinking, wherever you go, that somebody one day may tap you on the shoulder. What they would see is revenge for you breaking the code.
I know that's a possibility, yes.
I mean, to me, it would be ridiculous to assume you hadn't. You can't be a mafia captain for that length of time in charge of that number of people and not kill people, can you?
Well, let me put it this way. You know, it's a violent life at times. Mm. And if you're part of the life, you're part of the violence. And yeah, as a captain, I was given an order, told what to do, I did it.
What do you think happened to him? There's two schools of thought. He hung himself, or he was murdered.
Not only did I spend time in that prison, I spent time on that tier.
Right.
Because I was in lockdown. I mean, all those things happening at one time, the cameras are gone, the guards fall asleep. It doesn't happen. When I was in there, they were watching me 24/7.
Stephen, you mentioned Roy and the 12 Scousers. What was the story there?
Okay, so I'm on I think it's either B wing or D. I'm on the same wing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's a guy called Roy Hickman. Billy bleeped the mouse, I've told us, but Billy bleeped on. There's a guy called Roy Hickman. And he's basically running the jail. Yeah, right. But he's got some issue with me. Yeah, right, and I don't know what it is. Yeah. Turns out, I found out later on, turns out my son knocked him out in jail. Yeah, right. I didn't know that at the time because I was estranged from my son at that time. Yeah, right. But I can feel, it's Preston, it's HMP Preston, and I can feel the tension building up, building up, building up, building up, building up. Yeah. And I've said, like I told you, right, I was in general population, and I don't wanna go over the rape stuff again, but I was on a rape charge, yeah, right, and I'm in general population with a target on my back, right? Because if you're in jail, yeah, right, charged with a sex offense, yeah, doesn't matter if you're innocent or guilty, you're the target. Yeah, right. And the prison authorities wanted to put me on the numbers. Yeah, right. But I can't go on the numbers. Yeah, right. Because that's where the real nonsense are and the real rapists and the people that have done things to women and children. Yeah, you're right. So I'm going in general population, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. Yeah. One day we're over at the gym having some PT instruction. Yeah, right. And I can fall asleep on a clothesline. Yeah. So I fell asleep and someone chucked something at me. Yeah, right. Yeah, right. While I was asleep, and it wasn't him, but I thought it was him. So I told him about himself. Yeah. That started to increase the tension with us. Yeah, right. Then, anybody that gets to a jail, one scouser will land and it's okay. Two scousers will land and it's okay, yeah, right? Get four scousers. The scousers, yeah, in jail, yeah, are the only people that are able to take on the Muslims. Yeah, that will stand and take on the Muslims, yeah, right? Because scousers white scousers, yeah, are fierce. They've got fierce loyalty with each other. They're a fierce race of a breed of people. Yeah, right. And most of them have come to terms with the racism. Yeah, right. And are not racist anymore. But there's a few of them that still are. Yeah. But unfortunately, so I've told anybody in jail, if you've got a problem with me, yeah. Come to me pad, yeah, and I'll bring you in me pad, yeah, and we can sort it out. He turns up. They've got this light-skinned red-headed kid in their crew, yeah, and it turns out, yeah, he's an Osu. I think his name was Bobby Osu, and I'm great friends with the Osu family. Willie Osu, a line of a man, yeah, right. I used to model myself on him. Debbie also, his eldest daughter, Jackie, yeah, the mum who's just passed away, Mary. I know all the Osus, yeah, but I didn't know Bobby. But you got to remember now, yeah, I'm on a nonce charge, yeah, it's been in all the papers, yeah, right, and everybody believes I've done it. Everybody believes that I raped this chick, yeah, but nobody's saying nothing to me. Yeah. So they put the black kid up to come into my pad, and him and Hickman come to my pad. Name's something goes, and he's standing on my step. Yeah, right. So I just uppercut him quick, but I just clip him. I miss him. He says I tried to steal it on him. Yeah, right. But I missed him. Yeah, right. And then it was on the cameras. Then the screws come. Yeah. That was at the night time. Osu phones home and speaks to Shasha Sharon. I think Sharon was his mum or his auntie. Yeah. And they say to him, what are you doing going against Stephen? Yeah. So I christened him the Chalk Ice. Now, a Chalk Ice, yeah, is brown on the outside and white in the middle. And that name stuck on him. Yeah. I christened him. I said, you're the Chalk Ice. You went all in white guys. Yeah. And you're going against me. He came to me window. Yeah. In the thing, yo. And he tried to apologize. I said to him, when I get out of the cell, right, you and Hickman, I'm attacking you on sight. So he fucks off, right? I go down for me dinner. Right. And Hickman's on the savoury. Yeah. So I throw the food at him. Right. And try to get over the counter. But I get grabbed and get dragged off by about 9 screws. Now, I've been on that wing with them, for 3 months. And nobody said boo to me. Right. I go to the gym, I go to the church, right? Because even, and I was, what was I saying? I'm 57, right? But I keep myself a certain way. I keep myself a certain way, and I carry myself a certain way. Right? And I'm not scared to mix it up. Now I'm not on the same wing as him, right? Now I'm not on the same wing as him, And he puts a paid hit on me. I don't know how much they paid, and they paid Spice, and ended up getting whacked over the back of the head. That was all down to him. They paid. Not one of the scouts had the balls to do it themselves. They paid a 2-strike lifer that was never getting out of jail. From Preston to do it. Not one of them had the courage. To even sneak up behind me and whack me over the head. They had to pay an out-of-towner to do it. And those that were there know that's what happened. Those that were there knows that's what they did. And I call Roy Hickman's name. Billy Moore on the All or Nothing podcast. I mentioned Sam Walker and I mentioned Roy Hickman. Then Sam Walker made a video about Billy. Billy, who I love and like, got a tiny, tiny taste of what it's like to be me. Because they attacked him. They attacked him for having me and giving me that platform. And they came after him. And he's got to live with them. So he bleeped the names out. He bleeped the names out. He had an argy-bargy with Sam Walker. Sam Walker started saying that he was using his disabled brother for clicks. He doesn't, and he's not. He's a wonderful soul, and I like Billy. But he got a tiny, tiny taste of what it's like to be me. He edited the names out and capitulated to them. I don't hold it against him. He's got to live with them. I've lost no respect for him. But that's what happened. But see me, I'll call the names because they won't call me out. They won't want to fight with me. They won't want to do all that because even at 64, it's still there. So. Those white scouts, and it wasn't a race thing. He had some beef with my son, so he automatically didn't like me. He came in my cell, he come and sat in my cell one time, and his heart's going like that. I said to him, what's your problem? He said, I've got no problem, but don't think I'm a dickhead. I said, I haven't said you're a dickhead. Anyway, after I got attacked, they put me on A-wing, and that was D-wing. I went to church on the Sunday, and I sneaked back onto D-wing. I sneaked back onto D wing, and I got about four doors from his cell when the screw saw me and knew that I wasn't supposed to be on that wing. Because I would have went in and I would have slaughtered him. I caught him in the showers. Because you can have a fight in the showers. I waited for them in the showers at one time. And I was waiting for the showers to clear out. So I'm sitting there, but I'm just watching him, and he knows. He puts his pants on, grabs his shirt, grabs his shoes, and runs out soaking wet. This is what these people are like. Yeah. When I put them in a position where they're going to have to face me on my own, and then they go away. Yeah. And they big themselves up and they say, I did this to Frenchie and I did that to Frenchie. And they just lie. It's a lie. Them a lie. You understand? Yeah. Right. Warren Slaney, the hardest man, supposed to be the hardest man in the prison system. Yeah. I had a fight with him in Long Latin and he smashed me everywhere. Yeah. I watched as that lie began to gather traction. I don't know Warren Slaney. I've never been in Long Latin. Yeah. So I wrote to him on findaprisoner.com. Yeah. And I read it out on Yami B's, when I did a podcast with Yami B, and Yami B's laughing, they're all laughing. We don't do it like that. I got a reply from the guy. Yeah, I could read it to you now. You understand? I could read it to you now. I don't know why these people are saying this. Yeah. Now, first, when you write to findaprisoner.com, Yeah. You have to write to, and it's an email address. They go and see the prisoner. They say, this person's trying to get hold of you. Can this person have your number and your details? I know he's in full something and I've got his prison number. Yeah. And he's invited me to visit him. You're right. And he's supposed to be one of the toughest guys in the prison system. Yeah. I went online and I said, he's making out that he's had a fight with me. Yeah, this video's got a quarter of a million views. Yeah, right. With regards to he smashed me, the comments are gleeful. Yeah, I know it happened. I saw it. I was there, and it's all lies. It's all lies. And I've had it from the author's mouth himself. The video eventually got took down, and Yami B and I have become friends. Yeah, right. Because I squashed the beef. Yeah, but then Yami B made a big thing about he's going to knock on Stephen French's door. He's going to knock on Stephen French's door. I invited him to my house. I took him for breakfast. Yeah, I took him to the off license and bought him drink. Yeah, right. The station that he met me at, yeah, right, it's 10, 15 minutes from where I live. Yeah. On the high road. No knocking on my door. No none of this. Just let's sit down and talk about this. Yeah, right? Just to clear my name the amazing thing was I'd never even been in Long Latin jail. Long Latin is a lifer's jail. Yeah. I've never been in that jail. So now here's the interesting thing, yeah, right? And this is a dark story, yeah, right? And this isn't having a go at Yami, yeah, right? They was all worried, oh, Yami, don't go down. He's treacherous. He'll do this and he'll do that and he'll do the other. Let's say that was my game plan, yeah? First, I've taken him. Yeah, to Wetherspoons for his breakfast. And we're on camera. I'm actually putting he's starving hungry, and I'm actually putting my food onto his plate. I know I'm on camera when I'm doing that. Yeah, then I take him into the off license to buy him some cigarettes and some brandy. Yeah, right? So he can have a smoke and a drink. Yeah, and I'm making a big hoo-ha on the camera again. Yeah. Then we walk up the high street and we're walking together. Yeah, right. And I know there's all cameras on my high street. Then I bring him to my house and I say, this is my house. And I open the door and I let him in. Yeah, right. Now, if I had treachery in my arms, I snatch him like I did on Danny Dyer. Yeah, and I put him in a chokehold. Yeah. And in 4 seconds, he's asleep. Yeah. Then I lay him down on my couch. Yeah, and I make sure his head is over the couch like that, so his throat's exposed. Yeah, then, see that? That's called Ram's head. You see them knuckles? That's Cole Ramsey. They train knuckles. Then I smash him in the larynx. Yeah. Introduce his larynx to his spine. That's a killer blow. Now I've got a dead body on my hands. Yeah. When I was in Wetherspoons, I picked the knife up that he used. And I've got that with me. You understand? Yeah. Now I make some defensive wounds on my own arms, but I make it like he struck me. Yeah. And I lay him in my hallway. Yeah. And bleed on him a little bit. Yeah. Then I phone the police. And I say, he just attacked me. He pulled a knife on me and I've punched him in the throat and I think I've killed him. I know forensics won't be able to tell that I've choked him out. It'll be just look like he's been smashed in the throat and it's been one blow. Yeah, right? So if it's anything, it's manslaughter. Yeah. And then 4 months later, after 4 months on remand, I played the video that he made the night before where he says he's going to come down to my house and blow my head off. Yeah, he's drunk. He's going to come down to my house and blow my head off. Yeah, yeah. And I either get a not guilty or a walkout. Yeah. Just like my friend from Stockport, Aaron Coughlin. Yeah. Who killed Stephen Akinyemi, better known as Aki, with five bodies, he's a mill guy with five, at least five bodies on his hands. Yeah, 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 yeah. He was carried out of Aaron Coughlin's house, dead. Yeah. Now, here's where the police are wicked. Here's where the police are wicked. And this is the inside story on that. Stephen Akinyemi allegedly had raped a girl at knife point. And the girl made a complaint to the police. And the police knew that was going on. But they knew that there was an altercation and heat in the air between Aaron Coughlin from Stockport and Stephen Akinyemi from Cheetah Mill for who's the biggest G in that area. Yeah, and they wanted to sit back and let it unfold. So they never did anything. When the knife that was found in Aaron Coughlin's house was examined, they found specks of paint on the blade that was from the house where the woman alleged she was raped. And my guy got a walkout. Yeah, my guy got a walkout for self-defense. Very, very close to the edge. And like, I've met Adam once. Yeah, I went to do a job in Stockport, debt recovery in Stockport. Yeah, yeah. And I knew he was. So I introduced myself to him. I said, these people are going to come to you. Yeah, they're going to tell you this, that, and the other. Yeah, right. And if you tell them to pay the debt, I'll pay my dues to you in your area, because I was good at that job that I was doing. And these are the type of activities that happen. Yeah, right. So now I phone the police. Yeah, yeah. I've got Yami's dead. Yeah. I played the video where he says he's going to blast my head off. He gets a walkout. But that was never my intention. But I have the wherewithals to do that. I have the character and the fortitude to do that. If you watch Danny Dyer program, yeah, and I say I used to get in the hallway and wait for them to walk down. I've snatched loads of men. I'm 6'3". I'm 230 pounds. I lift them up off the floor and I've got you by your throat and you last about 3 seconds. You're asleep. Yeah, you're asleep. Don't care who you are, you're asleep. If I get you in a chokehold and lift you off the floor, you're going to sleep. Now, I tell that dark story, yeah, right, because that's what people was telling them that I'm like. Yeah, yeah. And I am capable of that. Yeah, right. Here's a line for you. I'm a natural born killer. I just choose not to kill. I choose not to take life. Yeah, you're right. Because I have the wherewithal and the capability and the constitution. Yeah, yeah, yeah. To kill my enemies. Yeah, like they killed my brother. You understand? Yeah. I make the choice not to be that way. And this is why I used to be such a terrifying character. Yeah. They've tried to turn me into a caricature of myself and a guy to be ridiculed and laughed at until they stand next to me. Until they've got to deal with the ferocity that lives inside me. Yeah. That's why, just to reiterate, yeah, right, when I'm talking about Joey Owens, and how he is. Yeah, they came in 1976 with Colin Jordan. They're part of the NF and the National Front and the BNP. They hate black people. You understand? With a passion. They've always been that way and they'll always be that way. Yeah, right? So I've got no time for them. I respect them because he'll tell you that. You understand? I respect them because he'll tell you that. Yeah? Do I fear him? Do I fuck? Yeah, I go on his podcast and I'll look at him like I'm looking at you, and I'll tell him about himself and what he wrote in the book. And I'll bring Ian Hollywood and the guy that they paid to kill me with me to back up what I'm saying, that what you've wrote in your book is shit about me. And I'm here bringing the truth and the receipts about myself. Yeah, because I'm one of the realest things ever to come out of Liverpool. I'm one of the realest guys to ever come out of Liverpool. I grew up in a time, right, when black people couldn't go to town or go into clubs. Yeah, yeah. This guy here, me sitting here, took part in dismantling all that. And those who were there know it's the truth. Yeah, the crew was so perturbed by me and the people that I was associated with in the 90s, and I wasn't even involved in the crime. I used to just go on the party scene, yeah, right? But I was looked at as the leader. Yeah, I was looked at as the top guy, and I wasn't. Yeah, it just looked that way. They sent for the Irish for me. They sent for the real IRA for me. Yeah. And they were prepared to pay £80,000. I was told it was 30. But the man who got the job told me it was 80. And he told me in the house of God. Yeah. And we hugged each other and we embraced each other. And those that were at that church witnessed that. It was joyful, man. It was joyful. Now, you might say, or people might say, Steve is inviting trouble to himself again. He's going to annoy these people. They're going to do this and they're going to do that and they're going to do the other. Yeah. They've been trying to kill me since I was 21. First time somebody tried to kill me, I was 17. See, my left hand doesn't work properly. Yeah. Yeah, I got my hand up and the knife went through my arm instead of into my throat. I was 17. Yeah, cut my three tendons. My fingers don't come up properly. Yeah, yeah. Because my tendons are sold and are not there. First time they tried to kill me, I was 17. Yeah, I'm 64. I'm 65 this year. I got my pension this year. Yeah, yeah. The only thing I allow myself is some Just for Men. Yeah, they tried to pressure me over that. They tried to pressure me over that. Yeah, yeah. One third of men dyed a beard. And I like to keep myself a certain way. Yeah, and if I don't dye my beard, I look like Father Christmas. So I do that. But what you find out about me is I'll tell you everything I do. It's like Rocco, yeah, or Ron. Rocco, last week, asked me a question that I could have scared him. But I didn't, because I'm practicing a policy of rigorous honesty, yeah, brutal truth, yeah, and I'm bringing the receipts for it, yeah, because the biggest killer for men over 40 in the UK is suicide. And the big, bad, wicked, tough devil man admitted last week that he thought about topping himself, because I didn't want to go through what I went through in 2013. I thought about it. I didn't do it. Yeah, I was visited in a dream by my brother, like I said. Yeah, and I'm here. And now, yeah, I'm on this mission, yeah, to fulfill my destiny. And for those who follow me, and for those who know I'm sincere, I will not be derailed this time. I will not fall off the precipice, yeah, and commit acts of violence, yeah, and find myself in jail in my 60s. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Yeah. Now, if someone, I do not think I am invincible. A 45 right there between my eyes will end me. Yeah. But I'm not going to live my life in fear of that. I'm not going to live my life in fear of a gang of men jumping me and kicking me to death. Yeah, because when I say I'm not frightened of a violent death, I'm not. But I've already seen my death. I die home surrounded by family. Yeah, because I believe I'm protected. When my brother was murdered, and they've come online, he's not your brother. He's not your brother. Yeah, he was just your mate. Yeah. Blood makes you related. Loyalty makes you family. We had loyalty to each other. We had great loyalty to each other. We were something else. And those that were around, no, we were something else. Yeah. When he was killed, the guy that killed him, people say, had more reason to kill me. I was taken into prison. C-Wing was the remand wing, Wormwood Scrubs, 1991. I was there from the 1st. I got nicked on April Fool's Day. Yeah, 1st of April, 1991 to July. Yeah, my mum come to see me. My mum was a beautiful, beautiful green-eyed, red-haired Irish lady. Yeah. She's still alive. She's 90 now. Yeah, right. She's got dementia. Yeah. And she's in a nursing home. Yeah. And her quality of life is poor. And she'd be better out of it. Yeah. And don't mean that in a horrible way. Alzheimer's is a slow killer. But she had a bit of a gift, my mum. And she came and see me. And she said to me, "You're in here for a reason. Something terrible is going to happen. Yeah, connected with your life." That was back in the days of Slop Out. Yeah. And I came back from Slop Out. I was on the fours and seeing, and I came back from Slop Out. And there were some scousers in the same jail as me from Canny Farm. And he shouted, Frenchie, have you heard on the radio? Somebody from Tocky's being shot dead, because it made the radio back in 1991, made national news. It was a big deal. Yeah. And I went, yeah, to listen to the radio, hoping that it was one of my enemies that had been plugged. That's the way I used to think. Yeah, and I come across the airways. Karate champion Andrew John shot dead. And I was in with one of the A-team's family. Yeah, yeah. One of the nephews or something. And I said to him, that's my brother. He used to all call me Scouse. Fuck off, Scouse. Stop messing about. I said, that's my brother. Then he knew it was my brother because the door unlocked. It was the priest, the wing governor, and the doctor. The priest come to tell me that my brother was dead. The wing governor was there, that he had to be there. And the doctor was there to give me the liquid cosh. Ligactol. Yeah, right. Because I was to carry on in that jail as well. When they threatened to give me the liquid cosh, Ligactol it was called. Yeah, sit there drooling like a warthog. You can't control yourself. Yeah, that's when I behaved myself. Yeah. And I was on a blackmail charge, and it didn't grasp my way out of that. Yeah, right. The person that had me on the charges was fixing arranged marriages for Africans. So my people just got 12 of the marriage statements, 12 of the marriage certificates that she had. Yeah, with her name signed on them. I said, turn up to court and we're going to show the judge these. Yeah, so she didn't come, and I was on £100,000 bail. I was at the Old Bailey. Yeah, and that's when I learned about getting a rain from the dock so they can't bring it back. Yeah, and I was arraigned from the dock. Yeah, the officers in the case, DC Alec Lindsay and DC Douglas Driffle, was saying that they'd spoke to her, she was coming back, she was doing this, she was doing that. They just said, no, this man's been on remand, this is going on too long. Yeah, and on the morning when we was going down, I got bail. I got £100,000 bail from TSO 11 remand. I was in Wimbledon Police Station, got locked out of the jails, and ended up TSO 11 remand, it was called, in Wimbledon Police Station. Yeah. On the way down, we flew. British Midlands used to fly from Speke to London. Yeah. And my dad was going to Trinidad. My dad was 1991. My dad was going to Trinidad. Yeah. And I was going to the Old Bailey. Yeah. And he thought I was going to get 10 years. And I thought he was going to get, he was going to Trinidad. 2 days later, I was walking up the hill in Arima, Tomas's Terrace. Say, yo, Frenchie. And he seen me. And I took my whole family to the Trinidad Hilton. Yeah. And we had a great party. And I came back. That was 91. Yeah. And that's when Andrew was dead. The writing was on the wall. What people don't realize about me, yeah, you're right, is by 94, I had my first daughter. And I stopped all criminality and went to work. Yeah. Built up a huge portfolio of property, had a huge massive security firm, had a debt recovery firm, and I used to work under the title of the problem solver extraordinaire. It's actually my phone messages. Yeah. And I used to help small businesses get the money off charlatans that used to be stuffing them. And I found a niche market. Yeah, right, because there's a lot of people out there that stuff regular people, regular everyday people. Yeah, and I used to help them. I used to work. It was kind of like the equalizer, but for commercial debts. Yeah, I had nice offices, Water Street in London, in Liverpool. Yeah, on the executive floor. Yeah, I had 25 phones going at the same time, because I've always known how to make money. And I made more legitimate money than I did illegal money, yeah? But my passion is to try to stop the senseless killing of our young people. Here's a stat for you. It came from America. This is one that really scared me. An endangered species is a black male under 25 in America. They're an endangered species. You don't know, like Chirac. Yeah, yeah. You don't hear about it. We hear about it, yeah, right, on what we call the Tom Toms and the Black News, yeah, right. But it doesn't play in mainstream. What's going? It's like in Liverpool, yeah. 6 homeless people died in the winter, froze to cold. Yeah, Liverpool City Council don't count the homeless till after 12 o'clock. Yeah, that's when everybody's moved around and start moving around. And then they say, oh, there's not this homeless. Yeah, yeah. The people in positions of authority and power don't care about us. They just care about they just care about lining their own pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's time, I believe. It's time. See, the masses don't understand the power that they have. Yeah, it's like, and this is slightly off track. Yeah, yeah, and this is one of the reasons why we get shut down. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This central digital currency. Yeah, yeah, right. Rishi Sunak, who's prime minister of this country and wasn't elected, he was just put in by his mates. Yeah, 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 yeah. Him and his family. Yeah, yeah. Own all the infrastructure to that digital currency. They're heavily involved in it. And it's a huge, massive scam going right on before our faces. It's in China. Yeah, yeah, right. And if you break certain social contracts, they take money out of your digital money out off your phone. Yeah. And then you're not allowed to buy certain things. And that's what they're trying to do to us in this country. Yeah, they're doing it with 15-minute cities.
I just need to let you know, we're down to our last 20 minutes, and I know there was a couple of things that I'm not trying to,
No,
last 5 minutes, Ron.
Yeah, last 5 minutes. So there was something that we talked about before the show about Joe Egan and a message you wanted to send out.
Joe Egan is a wonderful, wonderful fighting man. Yeah, I met Joe Egan. Yeah, when Mike Tyson came over in 2012, and people used to say that Joe Egan never sparred with Mike Tyson, and Mike Tyson put them straight. Mike Tyson has even made a visit, calling John Fury out, and Mike says because Joe Egan is defending Mike's honor. Yeah, right. Now, I picked Tyson Fury a long time ago to be the best boxer. I know his family, Peter Fury. I know him through Mark Olson. Yeah, I don't know Tyson Fury, and I don't know the dad. Yeah, what I do know is he comes from a fighting family, and if he doesn't accept Joe Egan's challenge, after he said he fights any man his age on the planet, yeah, yeah, right, he's bringing shame on the Tyson name. He has to accept that challenge. Do you have to make the fight? Yeah, forget what he owes KSI. Forget all that. Think about your family name. Because Joe Egan is calling you out. Joe Egan's your age, he's your weight, and he's telling you to do it. And I don't know who will win, but I know Joe will turn up. So why won't John Fury turn up? Shout out to Joe Egan. I'd love to see that fight. I traveled to Dubai to see that fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right? I think it would be a fantastic event. Yeah, and they say old men at a certain age shouldn't be fighting. They keep themselves fit. They evenly match, same weight, same age. Yeah, yeah. And you've got to remember now, yeah, yeah, John Fury said he would fight any man on the planet that age. Well, last time I looked, Joe Egan's from Earth, isn't he? Yeah. So I'd like to see that. And it's not me trying to mix it or pick sides. I just know how the traveler community are. I've got a lot of friends in the travelers community. Yeah, yeah. And I know how they are about putting your jukes up. Yeah, you can put your jukes up with a traveler, Yeah. And even if you get beat, they'll respect you that you turned up. Yeah. Old school, they call it. Old school.
Well, listen, I just want to say, I think we're probably going to have to schedule another event in the future for a big Q&A for everybody, because these lives that we've done, Stephen, have been absolutely amazing. The depths that you've went into has been amazing. And we'll definitely be doing another event prior to launching your new channel, the new podcast, and really sort of expanding on everything, because I think a lot of people will be excited to hear a little bit more.
Well, listen, if I can just say this, really and truly, yeah, right?
Yeah.
For me, yeah, personally, yeah, right? It's not really about who's going to watch or who's going to do this, yeah, right? I'm not really interested in that. What I'm interested in, yeah, is my own personal legacy, yeah, right? And I want to bring, who I actually am, yeah, not what people have tried to paint me. This is why I've called out some people, and I'm going to sit with these people, right? Because in here, I control my fear. I won't say I haven't got no fear. Yeah, I'm not a fearful person. Yeah, and I'm talking the truth. Yeah, and a lot of people have a difficulty handling honesty.
Yeah,
I'll leave it there.
Okay, well, listen, I just want to say a big thank you to Stephen, obviously, for letting us do this series. It's been incredible. And moving forward, next week we have our, you know, a new continuing on with our true crime series with John Wedger, myself, and hopefully Mr. Atwood joining us as well, where we're deep diving into the cases and getting back to the grassroots of some true crime. Now, just before we leave, because we need to wrap up, I've got a project that I'm working on that I'm going to play as the outro. It is an interview that I did in December with a man named Nico Klaus, who is known as the Vampire of Paris. I'm going to play this trailer. That's going to be our outro. Thank you very, very much, Stephen. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean.
We'll see you all.
Sean, I'll see you the week Friday.
Yeah. Please come and join us at the Michael Francis a week on Friday. There's going to be about 50 of my podcast guests, the viewers, many faces, all under the same roof for the first time. So it's going to be amazing.
All right. We've run out of time today. I had a couple of more stories, but we'll get to them later.
I'd like to come to your house, Stephen, and just do a huge podcast with all this, if you're up for that. I think the viewers would love that.
Yeah, you can come. You're most welcome, Sean. You're most welcome.
Thank you.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week, and enjoy the teaser.
Living with one foot on the other side of the grave, and I was under the shadow of death all my life, as far as I can remember. Even as a child, I was obsessed with graveyards. When I was a very small child, I was obsessed with stories of vampires and things I saw on television. When I grew up and became a young teenager, those thoughts became less rational, and maybe I lost grasp with reality at some point. Walking inside graveyards and trying to find ways to get inside crypts, and walking down the catacombs and being surrounded by those skulls and the smell of decay around me and all those things, I didn't feel ill or sad. sad or depressed. I felt that I was somewhere where I belonged. Like many sociopaths, I'm a control freak. I like to control my immediate surrounding, because if I don't control my immediate surrounding, I lose balance. So it's important for me to control everything more or less. Having control helps me not to fall into that dark pit.